The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
On to other activities. The ploughing is largely cancelled, but there is more and more talk about live gigs coming back, I think potentially sooner than was originally planned. And Dr. Tony Holohan even says that there is a chance the electric picnic might happen this year. So to talk about, I suppose, great gigs of times past and great gigs yet to come and the state of things in general, I'm joined now in studio by Stephen Falloon, who's General Manager with Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. And joining us remotely are Tom Dunn, broadcaster, and of course, lead singer with Something Happens, and Mae Kay Geraghty, who's a singer and of course also presenter on Other Voices. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Tom, how much have you missed going to live gigs this past year?
I've really missed it. It's been really hard, but I'll be honest, the bit I've missed far more is actually playing live gigs. I know we only do about 12 or 14 a year, but God, I live for them. Just meeting up with the lads, the rehearsals, the going on stage. And I still think when we do a song, when we're on song, when you're really in the moment and enjoying songs and you're at one with the audience, I think it's the best thing I do in my life. I don't think anything else comes near to it. And after a gig, it's like you've been to a therapist or something. You feel calm and grounded. That goes on. I find that goes on for a bit. I get a good 3 weeks out of that before I start getting angsty again. And
without ruining it by analysis, Tom, what is the magic alchemy that happens there in a gig?
I think about this actually during the gig, and I feel that singing in particular, you have to draw it up from the bottom of your feet. Every fiber in your body is active when you're singing, and you're also engaging your mind. You've written these songs, you're living them, you're breathing them, and you're doing this in the middle of a room of people who are connecting with it. There's something very primal, I think, about that, and it's wonderful.
You're in complete flow, and you're in flow with all these other people who are in the same flow. Yeah, it must be an extraordinary feeling. Stephen, have you missed live gigs, music and that?
Unbelievably. Like, I had a lot of tickets for a lot of stuff for the last year, 14 months. One of the things that I love most is the Trinity Sessions down in Trinity College in the centre.
It's a great setup,
isn't it? It's a brilliant setup that you're right in the centre of the city. It's so easy to get to. It's outdoors. I've seen Janelle Monáe there, New Order there. I was going to see Haim last summer. It's been rescheduled to this summer. The chances are that won't happen. But there is something. It is, as a punter, you know, there is something almost a bit random and abstract when you think about it, that these group of strangers, you know, stand in a field or a room and look at all at the same, you know, all in the same direction to this group of people playing these things and singing. And it doesn't actually make any sense when you think about it, but when you're actually there, you're transported into another world that is just transcendental.
Like that New Order evening in Trinity, it was a perfect evening, the sun shining.
The weather was
and
gorgeous.
And like for middle-aged people like us, you go in and have a bite to eat in town.
I didn't want to say anything, Brendan. I didn't want to say.
Go to an actual pub and you weren't queuing up for plastic.
None of this tent business.
But that thing you talk about, surrounded by other people who, you know, grew up with New Order all their lives, and we were all there together just for that brief moment. It was as if we all knew each other intimately.
Exactly.
And then bang, gone off into the night.
Totally. But the thing is, you leave with a big smile on your face and a bit of nostalgia, and it's brilliant.
Yeah. Mae Kay, unlike most people, you kind of have got to see a lot of gigs of a sort over the last year, haven't you?
Yeah, I've actually... Don't hate me. I've seen more gigs the past year than I think I've ever seen in a year. And I have to be honest about that. I don't think it's very endearing for me to say that to people who are really missing them. But Other Voices, I saw 30 shows in 2 weeks. And I was a wreck, to be honest, after it, because there isn't any of that kind of... You know, you're not getting the audience response, which is obviously a huge thing. And it was really intense, so I felt very privileged. It wasn't lost to me at all how lucky
I was. So you were in a room with a handful of other people, basically privy to these really intimate performances.
Yeah, from people that you're used to seeing. I was saying, I don't think I've actually ever heard Damien Dempsey sing properly, because if you're watching him in a crowd, the crowd are screaming so loudly back at him that I don't think I actually heard him sing properly before. So I got to see some really special things that, you know, the chance of a lifetime situation to be able to see them. But I think probably the same as anyone, what I'm missing is the spontaneity that's been taken out of the whole situation in the past year. You know, there's only that can happen with an audience, really. Everything's up for grabs. Anything can happen. And also, as you're saying, that it doesn't make sense sometimes when you think about it. Like, something that kind of unites all of us is that none of us want to look stupid. So really going on stage, belting your heart out about your feelings, it doesn't make sense. And it's quite foolish, actually, I would think.
Do you have to kind of switch off your critical mind and your thinking too much? Because you've obviously experienced it from both ends too. But when going on the stage, you just have, do you have to go into a shamanic other zone or something?
Yeah? Oh, I don't think I'm that good at it. But yes, I mean, really, it's like sometimes if an airplane's taking off, and you suddenly go, this makes no sense at all that this is going to work. I shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
So no, absolutely, it's a big skill and one that I definitely haven't mastered. But yeah, you have to go somewhere else, all right.
And then that magic that Tom talks about as well of the audience and performers together then in some kind of dance almost, yeah?
Yeah, it is a magic thing. And like you say, you don't want to ruin it with analysis, but it is a really interesting thing. People standing on stage facing an audience of people and us all helping each other. You know, the audience helps us as much as we may hopefully help them in some way. And it's not always to make people happy. It's to help people get through something or express something in a way that you never would. You know, the way we can dance, like, you know, dance in the middle of an audience. You would never dance like that if you were on your own. There was a spotlight on you. But for some reason, we can do it when we're all together sharing that kind of same experience. So really, for all of us and our health and our mental health and everything, the last year has been so difficult in so many ways. And that's certainly been one of them. I can't wait to be able to experience all of that again.
Yeah, that's funny you say that about like that. What happens for you on the stage and switching off thinking kind of happens for the people there as well. They subsume in a collective and forget all their little petty problems and almost become a public thing. It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Tom, of course, there have been virtual gigs and virtual events, I think, with differing levels of success. Have you done any online gigs?
We did one online gig. We did a gig from Whelan's and it was great to do it. And it was great to meet up with crew, like the sound guys and people that we hadn't seen in years and be in the venue in Whelan's and have a little bit of a magic moment. But it was at the end of each song, that moment of looking around at each other, like a rehearsal had kind of come to an end.
Yeah.
So there wasn't that feedback. It did feel like a very good rehearsal.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel like a gig.
And you see the thing, what Mae Kay is saying there about that, like when you go on stage and you make a fool of yourself, I'd say you could feel slightly foolish as well, getting too into it if there's no audience there.
Yeah, you do feel totally, completely. And we always have this thing of if we can get through the first three songs without making a mistake, then everything after that will be grand.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think once you do feel confident on stage, once you know you haven't made mistakes and you're starting to feel in the zone, that's when the magic starts to happen. But you only get it's a two-way street. It's when you do get, say, a great guitar solo, say Ray does something really special, the audience pick up on that. It's a feedback thing. And when they pick up on that and kind of are a bit warmer in their applause, that encourages you. You want to go harder. You want to try better after that. It's a feedback loop, you know. Take the audience out. It's very tough.
Yeah, brilliant. Stephen, in terms of theatre, obviously went virtual as well. Did you see much of it?
Indeed,
did that work?
Indeed, I did. Yeah, and actually, the way that I looked at virtual theatre was that it was a great a bridge to help us, you know, feed our addiction while we wait for live theatre to return. So yeah, I saw The Approach and The Project, The Visiting Hour and The Gate, and Once Upon a Bridge in Galway. And we ourselves in the Borgosh Energy Theatre did a virtual concert presentation of La Boheme with Irish National Opera, which was an incredible experience. Like, it was the most emotional thing to hear, you know, the first tuning of the instruments in the auditorium.
Oh, you were in the room.
I was in the room. And it was the most amazing, like literally in tears going, hearing live music again in the room. But of course, you know, it's not the same without an audience. It's lovely to do, and it's great. Like we the response for it was so brilliant. It was so great to see virtual live theatre. But it's in your living room.
Did you get catharsis? Like, no, you I mean, didn't but come you blinking out of the
no,
of
definitely,
the dark
no, definitely not.
Your life changed.
No, but the one thing I will say, I mean, we did. Whenever I watched it at home, we treated it as this is ridiculous that what we did, because we treated it as live theatre.
Okay.
So we got the YouTube up and put on live theatre sounds, you know, before the start, and had a glass of wine, and then turned the lights off, the phone off.
I didn't go to the toilet.
I didn't go to the toilet. I didn't annoy anybody. So, but it was lovely to do that just to remember what it was like, that muscle memory, but no, it's not the same.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's reminisce for a minute and conjure up great gigs from the past. Tom, give us some of your favourite gigs you've ever been to.
It's funny, when Stephen was talking there and he mentioned being transported, there are so many. Bowie and the Point in 2003 was one. I felt a bit, we went to loads of gigs initially. We used to go to places like the Bagot Inn and the Magnet Bar. They were really down at heel venues and small crowds. So there's a little bit of a feeling in the Point when it was redone and it was very fancy, that it's all getting very fancy. But then Bowie starts to play Life on Mars. And suddenly it's that thing that Stephen said, you're transported. Yeah. And it's like your life flashes before you.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, that's Bowie. That's the kid, the man that was on the radio when I was growing up at Drimna. That's him there on the stage.
Yeah.
And you're just blown away. You're really...
And it actually did feel ultimately, once it got going and you got into it, like being in a little club, didn't it?
Absolutely.
It was quite an emotional... I found it a very emotional evening. And then, of course, it turned out to be one of the last gigs he would ever play, kind of.
Yeah, very sad. There was a 2-minute long applause at the end of Life on Mars that he had to ask us to stop.
Yeah.
He had to actually say, I really appreciate this, but I have to carry on with the gig. And it was just everyone wanting him to know how much he meant to us. The whole room was going, you are such a person in our lives. You mean so much to us.
Yeah,
it was a beautiful, beautiful moment.
Yeah, and it was nice we had that moment with him, wasn't it?
Give me
one more so before I move on to the others.
I'll break everyone's heart now. I was invited to see Paul McCartney play The Cavern in 2018. I was going over on the flight. They kept saying there's still a possibility he may pull out of this and it mightn't happen. But it did happen. And I was standing about 20 feet away from him. And I just thought, he's probably going to do 2 songs and then walk off stage. He did 2 hours. And there was a moment where I knew he was going to do Feel Like Letting Go, one of my favorite songs, Paul McCartney. And he did it. And I literally just thought, take me now, Lord. That nothing in life is ever going to compare with this. This is the greatest moment ever. And I just felt very privileged and very... very happy, Brendan. Very happy indeed.
Yeah, it
was wonderful
moments. And funny, you can remember. I can remember moments from gigs. I practically remember how I felt in that second of particular moments. Meg Hay, give us a couple of your favorite gigs ever.
So in 2006, the AAS played Electric Picnic, and I just remember being in the audience, just not being able to understand how we all felt like she was singing to each of us. Karen O. It blew my mind and really did spur me on to wanting to be a front person, because it was, I still don't really understand it. I don't understand how we can speak to thousands of people all at once. And because I can still conjure the feeling now just talking about it, of being like, she's singing to me. And it was early in the weekend before anyone suggests that it might have been anything to do with anything. Very clear mad thought that I couldn't get my head around. I went to see at the drive-in in the Melkweg in Amsterdam a few years ago, and there was people crying while moshing in the mosh pit, and that was a spectrum of emotions that I wasn't expecting. Like I said, both of those shows, I remember seeing people I know dancing who would just never dance outside of those situations. And you wouldn't film them because they'd never dance again. But the way it moves the way it moved people's bodies, I don't feel like they were choices that we made to dance like that, you know?
Yeah,
so something they'd be bigger. two big
okay,
ones for me.
Okay, Stephen, what about you?
Okay, I'm going to go with two. One recently, which was Christine and the Queens in Longitude, I think in about 2015. And Longitude is a festival for younger people, so I was, even at that stage, I was a bit wee too old for it.
Yeah.
But me and a few friends got our tickets, and we actually went into the tent, and Christine and the Queens had just come out with Tilted, and I really loved it and been listening to the album, and we were literally there at the front. And for those that don't know Christine the Queens, she's a performance artist as well as a singer.
She puts on an extraordinary show.
The dancing was, to within an inch of its life, the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. And you're just in awe about that incredible performance coupled with brilliant vocals and brilliant songs. And then secondly, I'm going to go with, after I finished my A-levels, saved my money, and me and a few friends went to Glastonbury. in 1990, saw The Cure, saw Sinead O'Connor, saw Happy Mondays, New Order, and Inspiral Carpets. And it was the best weekend.
Wow, fair play. God, you negotiated Glastonbury very well.
We did.
Most people don't make it beyond the first thing they plan to
and
see.
And you know, we got everything stolen. We got all our clothes, all our toothbrush stolen. We didn't wash for the whole weekend. And it was literally the best weekend of my life.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
There's a texter, Alan in Dublin here, says, the best gig I was ever at was U2 in Slane in 2001. It was the last night of their three nights at Slane. Did they do three nights?
I thought it was two.
Yeah, halfway through the day, the gig stopped so they could show Ireland versus Holland World Cup qualifiers on the big screen. We won 1-0, of course. Absolutely incredible day. Yeah, that was the day that had it all, really, wasn't it, Alan? And Vicky says, great memories of something happens on stage at Groove Festival. My four-year-old delighted in watching Tom on stage from the front of the crowd, but somewhat horrified as he looked over my shoulder at the crowd of middle-aged people as they moshed their hearts out. There you go. And as Mae Kay says, they are middle-aged people who never mosh IRL in real life. But
I never said middle-aged in the
suspended animation of a Something Happens gig, they felt they had permission to do that. Guys, do you all think gigs can happen this summer? What do you think, Mae Kay?
I know that smaller ones that are being announced look like they're more possible than when they're being announced this time last year. I would love to think we'll be at Electric Picnic this year. I don't see how that will happen, but I mean, I'm not an expert on the topic at all. I was sad to see about the ploughing. That made me think that maybe that it doesn't make sense that other ones would be able to. But no, I've got tickets to see Nilo in the Workman's Club and Villagers in Vicar Street, and I am operating on the thinking that that's definitely going ahead. I think we have to really remember to support maybe, I think the artists that are really suffering from this past year are ones that were just starting. Yeah. So some of the other artists are going to sell their tickets and it's going to be great. But I really hope we get to a point of spontaneity again where we can start taking chances on new acts and giving them the kind of booster that everyone deserves to have when they're just getting off.
And on that note, Mae Kay, presumably a lot of your friends in music and in that whole space have just had their lives and careers completely upended, have they?
Oh, yeah. As I've said before, I've been really lucky in the past year. A lot of my work translated easily enough to the online stuff with other voices and with some other projects. So I've been lucky, but it has been quite painful seeing some people and the most hardworking of us all, the ones that arrive on site before we are up and they leave after we've gone home, you know, mostly the crews that have been out of work in the past year. I'm heartbroken for them. I don't think people understand the difficulty of being idle as opposed to, you know, it hasn't been a break. It hasn't been a holiday.
Yeah.
So I can't wait. And I really hope we all remember in every facet of businesses who deserves our help and our support when we get back out there, and to really not forget that we made these promises to help people out that need it when we're able to again.
Absolutely. Very good point, Stephen.
There is a message of hope too. One thing that, you know, even if we can't do live performances in summer, and hopefully we will, but there is the live performance support scheme, which is that 25 million euro government initiative that's basically getting the technicians, the crew, the artists back to work again and putting on events. The money's going to come out in June and that money will have to be spent by the artists and everybody over the summer, so that at least there will be people back to work, and there will be, if it's not with an audience, which I really hope it will be with an audience, but at least they'll be able to do it virtually and more live streaming.
Okay. Tom, can you see gigs happening this summer?
I have to say, I'm getting more optimistic about it. I see the numbers in terms of vaccines. I've been vaccinated now, and loads of people that I know are also. And I think there's a determination. I think the fact that Catherine Martin, as a musician, is one in her background, I think she knows what it means to people. And I think there is a determination. And I think there is a bit of a feeling that we could just do one push during the summer, whether they're subsidised gigs for, you know, smaller audiences or whatever. If we get through this, that come Christmas and come January, February, things will really be turning around. So people need that shot in the arm, because everything Mae Kay said is completely true. I know people who've been devastated by this, and for some people, they might have been working their whole life to the point of getting an album ready or getting new tracks ready, and then it just arrived in this absolutely barren environment where they couldn't do anything with it. And it's very hard on them, and for their self-esteem and their self-belief, and artists at the end of the day are very insecure to begin with.
Yeah.
I think something, a bit of optimism, a bit of hope to get people through is very important.
Tom, a lot of people in the hospitality industry now seem to have realised how precarious that life was, and that they threw everything into this thing and it could be whipped away very quickly. Do you think that's the case for musicians as well? Like, it was a precarious enough thing to get into anyway, and then this on top of it. Do you think people go, actually, you know what, I'm going to get the job in the bank and I'll play in a covers band at the weekend or whatever. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I think there is. I think from around 2003, it just kicked off in Ireland live-wise, that the picnic started to take off, festivals took off. And this idea that you could have a really good livelihood in the Irish music industry, whether you're on stage or side stage, you could. I think that took hold in people. So to see the whole thing, the carpet pulled out from all of it, has been devastating. And I think, yeah, I think there's quietly some people will be looking at it and going, yeah, that's too hard. It's hard anyway. Even if you're getting by, it can be tough. But I think a lot of people will look at it and go, this is too hard, because you've other pressures on you. You have pressures to look after your children or get married or have a family and have a home. And they're strong pressures. So if you're the one saying, no, I really believe in this, it gets harder and harder to say that. I think a time comes when people will shrug their shoulders and go, I just can't do it. So I really hope the cavalry get here soon.
Yeah,
I think as well, for anybody who is deciding, I can't do the music thing full time and I'm going to go and work in the bank and I'm going to do music, you're still a musician and you're still as valuable a part of the scene and as valuable a part of art as anybody is. You don't have to be doing it 24/7 for you to be a legitimate musician. So if that's a choice you make and it makes your life easier, then go for it if you can.
Yeah, and of course, Tom, you don't do it 24/7 really either. As you were saying earlier, it's a kind of an occasional thing with you. Would something happens be able to do a gig tomorrow if you got a gig? Are you in form or shape? Or
we'd be pretty dreadful. We'd be like a five-side team that hasn't played. But we'd still put on the gear and head out there. You know, nothing would stop us. To walk on stage, I think that there would be no mistake that could stop me. I'd live with any level of embarrassment.
Have you any gigs that you were going to as a punter that you're holding on to tickets for, hoping will happen, Tom? Or what would you be looking forward to seeing?
There's one happening in February. A band called The Lazarus Soul. I've loved them from the moment I heard their first albums. And they've just gotten better and better and better. So they would have been having a big summer. The summer before last, they were supposed to play the All Together Now festival, and that was pulled out. And they had big gigs happening in Dublin as well. They were all cancelled.
So they were on the cusp of a breakthrough, were they? And then
they were.
Bang.
They were.
Yeah. It's rough for bands that are at that kind of critical point, isn't it? Stephen, what's going to be the situation, do you think, in the Bourgash Energy Theatre? What are you looking at?
Well, we're looking at, we're obviously following the UK very, very closely. I'm talking to a lot of the theatres in the UK. When Bojo made the announcement in February with the roadmap that, you know, with the timeline of theatres opening, I don't think theatres in the UK believed it would happen, but now they really do. And on Monday, they're opening with 50% capacity or 1,000 people, whichever is the lesser. So there is hope there. And you know, we're catching up on the vaccine. So,
and you think it could be a capacity thing initially that you would decide?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Definitely. It's going to be social distance for a couple of months at least.
And I know the shows that you would have in there, a lot of them are booked out, obviously, very far in advance, and booked out in terms of booked to come to the theatre. Like, they have touring schedules planned and everything.
Sure.
So have ye big shows booked to come in, and are they
absolutely
going to come and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we've been rescheduling shows since this started 14 months ago. So by the time we get to open, and hopefully it'll be this year, we believe it will be this year, that we are going to be chock-a-block for at least 2 years, catching up with ourselves and all the big shows that we've had to reschedule.
Anything people would be very excited about?
Well, Les Miserables is always a perennial favourite. We've Book of Mormon, the funniest musical coming in November. We have Waitress Sister Act Chicago. We've just got loads and loads of brilliant shows one after the other.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much, Tom Dunn, May Kay Garrity and Stephen Falloon. Tom, I'm going to play out with, of course, that Bowie gig in The Point in 2003 was made into a live album. And if your moment was live on Mars, the moment it kicked in for me was, even though it wouldn't be one of my favourite Bowie songs, All the Young Dudes, I thought was where it was where suddenly everybody kind of everybody suddenly came together, and I think that it went from there then. But that was my moment. I can remember the moment of it kicking in. So listen, thanks a million, guys, and we'll take a little bit of David Bowie. This is with the masked choir of the Point Depot as well in 2003. All the Young Dudes.